It's my pleasure to introduce Joan Littencott, who is the Associate Executive Director of the Coalition for Networked Information. As you may not know, this is one of the premier organizations in the United States for doing leading research in the area of digital libraries and essentially everything that is interconnected with them. I have heard Joan speak many times, and I'm looking very much forward to this. Joan, you're on.
Thank you very much, Michael, and thanks to the conference organizers for inviting me to present at this really excellent conference. I've been very impressed by the quality of speakers and the level of discussion, and I hope to provide you with something interesting. I can't promise to finish by 11 o'clock, but I'll go as quickly as I can. My organization is the Coalition for Networked Information, CNI, and here's a little bit of information about us, but I particularly want to let you know that our website has a lot of openly accessible information on all the areas of study in which we're involved. So moving to my talk. The world of scholarship is changing and becoming data intensive, and we've heard a lot about that over the past couple of days. And so I want to talk about some of those implications, particularly for libraries and information professionals, including librarians. So in this world where researchers at the University of Liverpool create a publicly available website of 3D organic chemistry animations, okay, we normally think of researchers as producing publications, research articles, especially in chemistry, and not websites of animations. Or in archaeology, a consortium of universities and museums have produced a website that brings together sections or fragments of cuneiforms, clay tablets, and makes them accessible on the web and pulls together these materials so that you can see one cuneiform tablet that may actually reside in pieces in several museums. And it includes 3D models and transcriptions and other kinds of information. It's a very data-intensive operation. And researchers have actually become more involved in creating tools, and we've heard a little bit about that. For example, here's one developed by a scientist at University of Glasgow. He's developed a species search engine. And through that search engine, you can search, put in the name of a species, and you can get back genomic data from the NCBI, kind of the preeminent in the U.S. Source of genomic data. You can get images, articles, a mapping of the species, et cetera. We don't have such tools that have been created by librarians or are the kinds of indexing and abstracting services that we typically subscribe to. And even in education, a really important initiative in the U.S. funded by the MacArthur Foundation is looking at the kinds of skills that are needed for what they call participatory culture. How do we know that we're preparing our students to be good citizens in today's world? And they suggest a number of things that students need to learn, including, and there are many of these things, but just here I'm choosing one, that students should be able to interpret and construct dynamic models of real-world processes based on data. So students should actually learn to use data and construct simulations, for example. And this important work has been done by Henry Jenkins and his team. Jenkins was based at MIT and has just moved to USC. This set of recommendations he intends for students who have not even yet reached university. Now, this is not happening yet in the U.S. by and large, but this is what he feels is important for the future. So in this kind of world, are we preparing our information professionals for 20th century scientific information, where we expected things to be published in journals or in monographs, or for 21st century scientific information? And while you might think this is a photo, it's actually a data visualization put out by NASA, the U.S. Space Agency. So my talk today is going to give you some framework about e-science and e-research, and then move into discussing the implications for information professionals and professional roles. I do want to clarify that when I use the terminology information professionals, I'm including all kinds of professional titles here, and these professions have different training, different standards, different credentialing, but I'm including librarians, information technologists, information scientists, and others. There are others besides these. So first I'd like to talk about the increased attention to some of these initiatives in e-research broadly. What do I think is important for librarians and information professionals to understand about e-research? Why do we care about this? It's highly data intensive, so it's not just one researcher collecting data in a lab. It may be data streams from space, or it may be data streams coming in from tools that are monitoring aspects of the environment. It could be data collected from archaeological sites, could be data from images, all kinds of data. And in this world of e-research, not only do researchers publish articles or monographs, but they are collecting these really immense sets of data. Now, up to recent times, scientists would have their available data primarily so that if there was a question about their results, or if someone were calling them on some of their findings, say, remember the cold fusion controversy of a couple of years ago, that it was considered a principle of scientific practice that others could have access to the raw data so that they could check the results, or they would have access to the methodology in the data, and they could rerun the results and check for fraud or misrepresentation. And that remains true today. But importantly, the reason that libraries might want to get involved with these large data sets is that the data can be reused now for new purposes. There's so much data being collected in some of these projects that all of it isn't used to publish one particular article or even a set of publications. And so it may have rich data that can be exploited by others in the field for new findings. In addition, the data collected in one project, say about the ocean currents or water temperature, can be combined with other data, for example, soil erosion, geographically based, and used by other scientists to produce new research. And then, importantly again for libraries who often serve the full spectrum of users within many disciplines, the data may be used in unanticipated ways by people from other fields. So data collected at an archaeological site for use in archaeology and anthropology may be used, for example, by people in the art field, or in the literature field, or in other areas for their research. And that's why it can be very useful to have this data curated and publicly available and accessible. Now, there are many countries that are doing extensive work in this area, but I'm going to just briefly touch on a few national initiatives that involve information professionals in their work. And I'm concentrating on English language-speaking countries just because that's what I've been the most familiar with. In the UK, there have been a number of important commissions that have done reports outlining directions for UK involvement in e-science and e-research, and they've set some groundwork for work in the information field. One of the outcomes is the establishment of the UK Digital Curation Centre, or DCC. And while the name may suggest that this is a repository for data, that is not in actuality what they do. They are really a think tank, a research organization that investigates good policies and puts out good principles, and also helps to create tools that can be used in various projects. Another project, the DataShare project, is in fact a pilot project with three universities in which those universities are using their institutional repositories to begin to collect and curate large data sets. So we have on one side the principles and the overview, and in this newer project, the actual implementation. Again, these are just two examples. There's a lot going on in the UK. In Canada, a working group is being headed by the director of CISTE, which is the Information and Library and Information Service for Science Technology, the national level group. And this working group has been established. I have the URL here. And actually, while I've been here at this conference, they've just issued their report on a research data strategy. So I haven't even read it yet, but it's now available. In Australia, they've had a pilot project funded through the government and involving several universities that's also looking at establish some large data sets in institutional repositories in Australian universities and got some experience with how to do that and how to manage data in different areas. In the U.S., our work in e-science and e-research is primarily based on the foundation of these three significant reports. And I could do a whole talk summarizing these. But I just want to say that the first one established our definition or our working definition of what cyber infrastructure is about. And that we use the term in the U.S. cyber infrastructure that basically equates to e-research. And in that report, importantly, it noted that for data-intensive science, we don't just need networks and big computers and storage. We need people who understand information, and we need strategies for managing and curating information. The next report, the long-lived data collections, was sponsored by the National Science Foundation through the National Science Board, and that directly addressed the issues related to large data sets. And they used a term, data scientist, to talk about the types of information professionals that we need to involve in projects to help manage data. And then the third report was the humanities and social sciences saying, hey, what about us? We also are using large data sets, although it may not be as pervasive as it is in the sciences. And so the leading organization of professional and scholarly societies in humanities and social sciences issued their report on e-research. In my own organization, we've been working on these issues for a number of years. We write about these issues and make presentations, and we also try to highlight the leading projects in these areas at our semi-annual meetings. In addition, the Association of Research Libraries has an e-science initiative with several important reports, including one I have on my last slide, which was a follow-on to that long-lived data report from the National Science Board, in which they convened a number of scientists and librarians, particularly to talk about the role of librarians in this arena. So from my perspective, the good news is that we have some very significant national level initiatives where the policies and key issues are being discussed, and they do involve librarians in a variety of ways. There are a number of challenges, though. There are many levels of support and interest in different countries and among different disciplines. There are more principles being suggested so far than actual practice, and I think we need more practice in this arena. There are good venues for sharing the lessons learned and for hearing about pilot projects, including right here in Bielefeld and the DCC conferences that are being carried out every year. But the question is, how many of them are resulting in implementation and pilot projects? And who will actually carry out this work? The issues are truly complex, starting with, for example, how to address what is curated or accessed on a global basis, a national basis, regional, disciplinary, or institutional. The different cultures of the academic disciplines and the willingness of researchers in different disciplines to actually share and make available their data. Key are the funding issues, who's going to pay for this, and then I'll move to the next part of my presentation, the role of information professionals. So I'm going to talk about a number of actual and potential roles. I think one of the things, if those of you here in the audience today are not working in this arena yet, this is something that you might want to think about when you return to your universities, having an institutional data audit on your campus. I think this works well with the kind of work that Wendy Luger described on her campus of going to interview faculty and finding out about their research. In this case, the focus would be on the data that researchers are collecting, how they're using it, how they're making it available, how they might want to make it available on your campus. And there's a ready-made tool available for you to use. Through JISC funding in the UK, a research group at University of Glasgow called HADI has put out the data audit framework, complete with all the tools that you need, interview rubrics and other background information that you can take and customize for your campus and actually do a data audit, say, with one of your faculties or with a sampling of faculty at your institution. And they did a pilot with three universities using the data audit framework. And I just want to highlight two of their findings. One, which is not surprising, is that there's lots and lots and lots of data out there, but there are few policies or repositories that accept or set up for accepting data or funding for any kind of stewardship. But importantly, the researchers don't know where to begin and are unaware of available support. And I encourage all of you in this room to ask yourself, at your university, do you know to whom a researcher would go if he or she needed support for data stewardship? To the library? Is your library prepared to give that support? What would your answer be? How might you support this? So, the traditional roles that we think of for librarians and information professionals in data, in relation to data, are these: the metadata creator or advisor. And in these projects, it's very important to think through. There may be highly specialized data for which the librarian or other information professional really needs to know and understand the terminology of particular disciplines, and also be able to advise on metadata for purposes that have not been thought about yet. In addition to documenting the metadata, we need to understand the workflow, the software, and the processes used to generate this data, because once the actual tools that were used to collect data may have become obsolete or have new versions, we need the documentation of what was used at the time so that data can be rerun in future years. Interoperability advisor. Many researchers would like to combine their data with data collected by other national groups or disciplinary groups or whatever. And information professionals can help them design their data so that it may be in a better position to interoperate with other data sets. And then the whole stewardship and curation issue, making sure that this data is available for the long term. Now, not all data should be curated for the long term, but again, that's part of the conversation of the information professional, helping to researchers to decide and develop institutional policies or implement governmental policies of what should be retained for the long term. Now, my interests are particularly in education and the relationship of information and education, and I think maybe we're not paying enough attention to these kinds of roles for information professionals, training researchers, and particularly graduate students who tend to be more technologically savvy so that they will build in documentation of workflow and rich metadata into their own research as they go on. Outreach facilitators, linking the data sets to teaching and learning program, and raising awareness of the importance of data. We have a lot of opportunities for partnerships with scientists and with others. Some information professionals are already working as part of research teams, helping them design their data sets and their metadata, et cetera. A recently awarded contract in the U.S. called the U.S. DataNet Proposals will go to two very large projects that will pilot methods for stewardship for very large data sets and a requirement of the National Science Foundation grant proposal process was that librarians be involved. On the smaller scale, at the institutional level, we need to think about providing services from the library for local or disciplinary projects or to assist faculty, say in the engineering school, who would like to acquire data sets for their students to use in projects, or in the art field or archaeology field, connecting faculty with data that's out there that they can use. So here are some thoughts about connecting to teaching and learning. This may require revamping and some facilities in the library. Here at the University of Pennsylvania, in the library, this digital media lab is equipped with software and trained staff is available to help students do new types of multimedia projects. They also have a plotter available, which is a type of equipment that will generate very large scale posters so that students can actually have mini symposia where they do poster presentations like they would do at a professional conference. At the North Carolina State University, in their new Learning Commons, they have large screens around the facility in which they invite faculty and graduate students to submit interesting data visualizations and images from their research. This is a way of connecting the library to the e-research work that's being done at the university. At the Seattle Public Library, they have a data visualization of all the books and the call numbers of the books that have been checked out during the past hour. It's, to me, like a public recommender system that you can see over the reference desk. And at Purdue University, I visited their 3D visualization theater. And so here again, where the data that is behind many of these projects is pulled together for visualizations. And on the day that I visited, I walked through classical Rome. And you put on 3D goggles and you enter this room and you can see a 3D representation of classical Rome. And classes of students come into this space and study the buildings. It's also used particularly in the health and medical sciences to simulate procedures. Even a small college like Vassar College, which only has about 5,000 students, has a visualization lab as part of their chemistry department. So students, undergraduate students, are learning to use 3D visualizations in chemistry. We can link as information professionals to these initiatives and be part of these. So I'm almost getting towards the end. So here are some of my areas of concern. Where do we go from here? How many information professionals are currently ready for these roles? We would like to move into these areas, but are we genuinely prepared? And if we're not prepared, is training of current and future staff available? One of the programs in the U.S. that's been developed is at University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and they have a data curation education program. It's quite a new program, and in addition, it's a master's level program. In addition to this, they have a summer school. I think that it may be focusing on humanities and social sciences, but I'm not certain. So this is one example of where things can go. I'm sure there are others, but it's probably a very small number. Another area of concern is, will administrators, and I mean all types of administrators, administrators in the library, provosts in the U.S. or rectors or other funders, the academic funders in the university, recognize the need for these new types of positions in the library or information organization? Will scientists actually accept these information professionals as partners? This is a cultural thing, and this is a really key issue. And who pays? Who's going to fund? Will it come out of the grant funds? Will it come out of the institutions funds? Who will decide that this is a priority? So here are some of my thoughts about what we should be thinking about as we move into this new era of information professional involvement in e-research. First, I think that we need all stakeholders to develop a broad view of the issues involved. I think the UK has done the best job of this that I'm aware of. They assemble the researchers themselves, government agencies, librarians, information technologists, and probably others, to look at these issues together and from all points of view. We need to promote a vision of digital libraries that includes data as a critical component. Now, that is my own personal viewpoint, but I do think that libraries today need to decide, are they in or are they out? Are they primarily going to support the traditional journal monograph repository, which is a choice and a legitimate choice, or are they going to move into this arena? It needs to be a clear decision. We need to work towards partnerships with academic researchers. We need to establish credibility, but in order to establish credibility, the librarians and information professionals have to have the genuine skills where they can contribute as partners in these projects. We need more pilot projects, and we need assessment of these projects. We need to understand what works and what doesn't work. And we need to set priorities. This, as I said, is a very complex issue. There are many hard questions. We can't address it all at once, and so we need to set priorities. So I note that I credit some sources that I've used, and this is the reference to the working paper from the ARL-NSF workshop that specifically addresses professional responsibilities and roles for librarians in this process. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Joan. And we have time for one or two quick questions. Yes, please.
Graham Jeffcoat, Nijmegen University. We heard from Leo that we in the Netherlands are very much concentrating on building institutional repositories based on open access of peer-reviewed articles and dissertations and so on. When I go to the US, colleagues note that politely, but say, no, no, what we're doing is building institutional repositories for new kinds of presentation of academic and scientific results. In other words, data, the kinds of data sets you've been presenting. There's a question really to Leo and yourself. What's going on here? I mean, I'm confused, frankly.
First of all, I would say that in the US, it's both. The institutional repositories are both for preprints or published versions of articles or even monographs and data. And Cliff Lynch and I wrote an article about this a few years ago after a survey of U.S. institutions and noted that this is in marked contrast to what many European universities are doing. It's a different choice. But I think that, for example, in the U.K., through the Data Share, I think, project, the one that they're piloting with three universities, they're beginning to use their institutional repositories for data. Leo, do you want to add anything here?
Well, actually, I think you should do both, but it is a matter of priorities. And in my approach, the focus on research data, etc., should not become an alibi for not working anymore on open access to articles, the more that articles should include more and more research data and algorithms, etc. So there you have the combination of things. But, well, it is a matter of priorities. Right. But at the end of the day, you should do both, I think.
Let me also remind people, Herbert von der Sampel yesterday mentioned this and said there was more attention to traditional publication types in his impression in Europe and more attention in the U.S. to data. And that he argued, I thought, very convincingly that we need really to think about the data issues because those are not yet proprietary pieces of commercial publication and are much more available for open access. Is there one last quick question before we go to coffee, or in my case, tea? No?
Yeah,
there is. Ah, sorry.
Thank you. Joachim Engeland, I'm a publishing consultant. I'm just interested in the mere impact of the amount of data that we're expecting. So do you envisage that we might see something like a peer review system of data sets one time because we just can't manage the amount of data? And maybe as an effect of this, do you think that the limitation of storing data then lead to another kind of branding system that would help us navigate to the kind of data? So high-quality data may be expected in a very strict environment which only allows certain qualities of data.
I think that's an important question, and it doesn't have just one clear-cut answer. So there are some global projects. For example, I think we saw some yesterday afternoon in the atmospheric research and the astronomical research arenas where there are huge sets of data, and they are funded by national-level governments, plural. Means a number of governments come together to fund these projects. And I think these massive established projects will likely continue with their massive storage needs. And this is partly what this long-lived data report addressed from the National Science Board, that they said there are three different levels, the global projects, kind of medium, either national or disciplinary projects, and then the projects of like one researcher with a smaller data set. And I think each of those three, and you might want to cut it into five layers or three layers, whatever, needs a different set of principles. Yes, the storage requirements are massive, and in the U.S., one of the big issues that's being discussed is the energy consumption of these data storage facilities. They require a lot of air conditioning, for example. And so this, just in and of itself, is a great expense, and building a building to house the server farm. So absolutely, priorities must be set. And so there are many levels in which these priorities can be set. And what I suggest is that those of you in this room who may not be involved in national level or global projects, and some of you may be, but those of you that aren't, begin to discuss these issues in your own university to start to think about some principles or talk with the different faculties in your institution about working with them to establish principles for the selectivity and the priorities of data stewardship. We can't do it for everything, and I think that it would be there's no reason to try to do it for everything. So we do need quality standards. It should not come from information professionals. It should come from a team initiative led by the researchers in a discipline, in my view.
Thank you. Let us all give a round of applause again for all of our speakers.